You are listening to the Innovative OT Podcast, where we firmly believe that role-emerging and role-enhancing areas of practice are the future of occupational therapy. Dr. Sarah Anderson, OTD, is a mental health and pediatric OT, OT educator, and entrepreneur. Listen in on the conversation as Dr. Anderson and other OT innovators share their plans, goals, dreams, and aspirations for the future of the profession. If you're ready for some inspiration, motivation, and encouragement, you're in the right place. Here's your host, Dr. Sarah Anderson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Innovative OT Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah. Today, I have a guest on named Patty Smith, and Patty is an occupational therapist who lives in Wisconsin and specializes in addressing lactation, especially with babies who really struggle to feed. I would say her expertise is with the more challenging cases. She also sees adult clientele who struggle with pain. So, here we go. All right. So, Patty, can you just kind of give our listeners like a deeper understanding of your background as an occupational therapist?
So, I've been an occupational therapist since 1991. So, been doing it for a while. And my background started out, you know, pretty heavy in pediatrics. So, I started out working in a hospital setting that contracted out to schools. So I worked in the Chicago Public Schools, then was also able to work in the neonatal intensive care and in the birth to three program within the same hospital program. So I got a lot of variety of experience there, as well as I had a lot of adult experience because we were able to work on the different hospital units. That kind of got me started, more launched into peds though. And then when I moved to Madison, Wisconsin, where I live now, I started out working in home health and birth to three there until I started my private practice, which was about 17 years ago.
Okay.
And so I've done that in combination with other outpatient pediatric clinic jobs and HMO jobs as well. As my career. And right now I'm solely doing just my private practice for the last 3 years.
And Patty, will you tell our listeners what your private practice is called?
So my private practice is called Nurturing Touch Therapy. And the basis of my practice is I work with all age groups, but I work probably 50% or 60% or more of my private practice is with infant feeding. So I'm, you know, both an occupational therapist and an IBCLC, which is an international board lactation consultant. So it's the highest tier of being a lactation specialist. So I kind of combine those two hats in my practice to work with probably the most challenging nursing babies that oftentimes also have challenges with bottle feeding. They have, you know, sensory challenges, they have neuromuscular challenges, and it's sort of the larger umbrella of treatment, but they're also coming to get help with primarily breastfeeding as well.
Okay. And with the other, say, because you said around 60%, 50% of, right, what you see is for that, what is the other 40%?
Yeah, so I do work with adults that have chronic pain issues because I do a lot of a variety of treatment modalities. So I use some craniosacral, some visceral manipulation, a lot of lymphatic work, like a lot of neuromuscular work, myofascial type of work. So those are always really beneficial for people that have chronic pain. So I deal with a lot of people with migraines and headaches and fibromyalgia and injuries, do a lot with post-concussion work as well.
Okay.
And then I also work with children. So I work with children that have sensory special needs and then some children with feeding issues also.
Okay. So you've almost got like three different practice or three different areas really that you're kind of focusing on. So how do you get, what are your referral sources for each of those areas?
You mean, where do they come from?
Yeah. Where do they come from? Exactly.
So they come from the community. I get a lot of referrals from physicians. that refer a lot of the feeding babies and a lot of the children to me, and as well as adults. And then some of it's word of mouth too, because then once you have a private practice, if you've seen a lot of clients, then, like other moms will refer other moms and just other professionals in the community. I mean, I get a lot of referrals also from other nurse lactation consultants. So if they have a really tricky baby that, that they've worked with for a little bit and they're kind of hitting a wall and they really are not sure what's going on with this baby, then I'll get a referral from them. So a lot of times I see a baby after they've been seen by a few lactation consultants, and just sort of the basic lactation stuff isn't really quite working, so that they know that, oh, there's something going on. This baby maybe has some torticollis or plagiocephaly or some oral motor issues or a tongue tie issue or something else that's really standing in the way of them being a successful feeder.
So for your business, do you bill through insurance or is it private pay?
So I do private pay primarily because in my city that the insurance companies are primarily HMO PPO based.
Okay.
So they're not necessarily open to private practices to join.
Okay.
I know in other cities it's possible to get on a lot of insurance panels, and in my city, because it's small, it's really not.
Okay.
But what I do is I provide invoices for my clients that with codes that they can submit as if it was an insurance provider. Sometimes they submit it to some of the open panels and can get reimbursed. Other times they'll get reimbursed from like their flex spending and some of the other ways that, people get reimbursed now for healthcare. A lot of people now have high deductibles anyways.
Yep.
So I feel like they're working, towards that without getting insurance, being charged from the very beginning. So it's a pretty open system. And usually by the time people come to see me or know that I'm a good referral source to them, they know they really need to see me. So, and the system doesn't have necessarily a provider that does exactly what I do. So, so that's why I get referrals from a lot of physicians and nurses within the systems as well.
Okay. Well, and the reason I ask Patty too, is because a lot of listeners, if I ever get emails about questions when I interview people, a lot of people who are interested in wanting to start their own business ask that question about, should I go through insurance? Should I consider just doing private pay? And I'd say a lot more OTs who are entrepreneurs are considering just doing private pay, because sometimes it's just more of a headache to work with insurance.
And I think there's that too. If you have a biller, that you work with, but if you do insurance, you kind of have to decide to really do it and be all in, because it's hard to have, you can't have separate pricing. So, so I feel like it really kind of keeps it simple to not necessarily bill insurance and keep your prices considered reasonable, that people can afford and still utilize your services.
Yeah. That's wonderful, Patty. Okay. So what was it 17 years ago that made you decide, I want to have my own practice. I don't want to work for anyone else anymore, and I want to do things a little bit different.
Yeah. So I had a friend that was starting a clinic, and she was an acupuncturist, and she did a lot with pregnancy in acupuncture and a lot of moms and baby related things. And she just asked me if I wanted to join her practice. And I had just, had my second child, and I was kind of launching my kids off to school and preschool. So I just said, sure, I'll try this and see how it works. And my practice grew really, really rapidly.
Oh, that's amazing.
But throughout that, I've also worked at other places too, sort of done a combination. So since I've had my private practice, I've also worked at an HMO clinic. And then I worked at a birth center that we used to have in Madison. So I did a specialized feeding clinic at our birth center. And then I also have worked at outpatient clinics, throughout the whole time too. So kind of have still worked for some people, but then also had my private practice in addition.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's incredible, Patty. Okay. So what is it about being able to address multiple populations within your practice that I shouldn't say is motivating, but what keeps you excited about that? Because sometimes when people go into private practice, they pick one thing and they just do that one thing.
Yeah. So because I've always worked with a variety of populations, even though my practice has always been peds heavy, I feel like I do like the variety. I feel like I have a lot to lend for people that, that you know, do have pain issues. So I feel like the work I do is really helpful for that. So I guess just the variety I like. I like having, you know, sort of a mixed caseload in my week rather than only having necessarily one type of client only. But yeah, okay. I agree. Some people do that. Some people just pick one thing and stick with that. But yeah.
Okay. So what is the most challenging part about having your own business? And then what is the most rewarding part of having your own business?
I think, you know, for me, the challenge really comes from that, you know, I wish everybody could just get it covered, right? That it wasn't like, oh, you have to think about that, you have to pay out of pocket. So I feel like that's an ongoing challenge for me, that, you know, I wish my clients had full access, no matter who they were or what their status was, of if they could afford to pay for anything out of pocket. So that's one of the challenges. I mean, there's always lots of challenges when you have your own business. I mean, you run it yourself, right? So you do everything. I mean, I don't really have any admin. So I do everything from, you know, updating my website to networking, you know, to all the things you do for a business. You answer all your phone calls, return all your phone calls. So it's kind of a, you know, a one person shop, which, you know, always has its challenges. But the rewards are that I feel like, you know, that when people are coming to you, they're kind of looking beyond what the system has to offer, and, you know, they get referrals and they know, they hear about you. And so they feel like your service is really worth using. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't be coming to you if you weren't doing a great job at what you were doing. So, yeah. So I think that's probably one of the biggest rewards of having a private practice. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So having practiced for, you know, a length of time, you're very experienced. What do you see as being the future of occupational therapy? You know, we've always practiced the traditional way and traditional practice areas will always be there, and they need to be there. But like, what is it for you? Especially, I feel like you, Patty, you know, early, many, like years before I think more emerging practice areas were coming into play, like you really decided to kind of pave your own way. So what do you see as being the future of OT, and what do you think young OTs, or I should say new OTs and OT students, really need to start thinking about?
Yeah. I mean, I think for one, OTs, it's such a cool profession. And I feel like people that go into it, you know, we have sort of the mix of, we like that biomechanical piece. We like all that, you know, neuroanatomy piece, but we really like that soft side. We really like that social, emotional, psychological piece as well. And we blend them together so nicely. I think, you know, much better than a lot of other professions do. So I feel like that's what makes OTs so cool. And when people, you know, meet OTs and talk to us, like, you guys know so much, you know, because we have to, because I feel like we're blending a lot of things together. And because of that, I think you can do some really, really cool things with your profession and your practice, and blend it together in so many different ways. If you want to be entrepreneurial and do a private practice, if you want to work in schools, if you want to work in outpatient clinics or acute care, I feel like there's such a variety of things that we can do. And so, you know, new therapists or, you know, considering going into OT or in school, I think that it's really great for them to actually explore that and actually talk to and interview other OTs that might be doing something a little out of the box, in case that's something they do choose to do, or maybe they just choose to do it part-time rather than full-time. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the field is really emerging in that direction, where I know you're probably on a lot of different groups and, you know, professional groups where you hear different OTs and what we're doing. And there's a lot more of us that are doing the type of work I'm doing than there was when I started doing it 17 years ago. And I'm kind of excited about that, because I feel like Like I started doing this, you know, and I'm always the only OT in the room when I'm at a lactation conference, right?
Right.
You know, every once in a while there's another speech therapist, but mostly it's other lactation consultants and nurses,
yeah,
and doctors, but I'm always the only OT. Mm-hmm. So I always have this interesting hat and interesting information to lend to the situation, mm-hmm, because OTs look at things through such a different lens,
yeah,
that I think we really can be really helpful on a lot of teams, mm-hmm, especially feeding teams and working with infants and helping people understand infant behavior.
Yeah.
I think is really, really lends a hand. And, you know, even back to chronic pain, I think we look at it very different because we look at it through the occupation of life and how is this affecting you? Yeah. It's not just you're a patient in the cog and the wheel here. It's like, wait a minute, you know, this affects you every day. Mm-hmm. And how can we give you some daily habits and changes? Can we change the way you breathe? Can we change the way you hold your posture when you're at work? I mean, so we're always looking at those pieces when we're looking at helping and healing people.
Mm-hmm. Patty, I almost wish I had you at my disposal. What was it? Gosh, Penelope's now almost 10 months, but breastfeeding was fine for a while, but then I needed to transition her to a bottle. And she did not want that bottle. I think we went through like 10 different bottle nipples to figure out what she would take. And then I ended up finding a lactation consultant out here who kind of helped me. She just, like, as a new mom, I think there's just so much going on inside your head and you're physically recovering that I needed like external help. And she was wonderful, but I do feel like when it came to like that holistic perspective, I almost wish I had an occupational therapist to go to because I felt like she was very focused on just getting Penelope to take the bottle and educating me on like how to almost more like forcefully give it to her. Cause as a new mom, I wasn't sure like, you know, right. I don't want to hurt her. And sometimes the reactions are not quite what I had expected. And instead I think an OT probably would have asked more about like, how am I doing? What are supports like that I need? More of that holistic perspective, maybe looking into the environment, the task, the person, versus just really focusing on just the baby and the fact that they need to take the bottle. So I think the way that you explained that was so beautiful because, yes, there are other professions doing this. Her background, I believe she's a nurse practitioner, and then she got certified in lactation consulting. But I think OTs have such a unique lens to work from on some of these areas that are a little bit more non-traditional. So,
yeah, and I think, you know, when you're working with a dyad, which is, you know, a mom and baby,
yeah,
you're looking at a lot of behavioral pieces too. You're,
yeah,
looking like the whole sensory profile of what, yeah, is the baby doing, and is this baby dysregulated? Is this mom dysregulated?
Yes,
you know, and kind of putting those pieces together so that they can work together.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes the mom needs to bounce on a therapy ball to help the baby as much as the baby does.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of looking at the greater picture of how to help regulate this pair together or the whole family, or depending on who comes to the session with us. Sometimes, you know, it is two parents, yeah, that come a lot of times, you know, pre-pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So I think we're always looking at those pieces, and those are the pieces that often get missed from other professionals. When you'd ask me, why isn't a baby taking a bottle?
Yes.
I'm going to look at a whole bunch of things. Why your baby didn't take a bottle. I'm going to look at, for one, I'm going to look at, you know, deeper into the oral motor and say, great, she really did great on the breast, but what is it about her that's not so flexible, that didn't seem to want to transition to a bottle because it feels different? It,
yes,
seems different. The suck is completely different from breastfeeding to bottle feeding. They're not the,
yeah,
same.
And then mom starts to get stressed out.
And then mom
that was me.
Because she's got to get back to work.
Yeah.
And she knows that baby needs to be in some daycare. And while she's a great breastfeeder, why isn't she a great bottle,
yeah,
feeder? And so we kind of look at like, what's with that lack of flexibility for that baby? And then look at lots of other things. And is the baby hung up someplace else? You know, mm-hmm, for me, every evaluation includes a full evaluation of the body and a full evaluation of what did this baby look like in tummy time? And are they at the right developmental stage?
Yeah.
And are they really tight? And what does their tone look like? And how do they deal with, you know, different transitions of positioning? And, you know, you just look at the whole repertoire of OT skills that this baby has, and that's their occupation, is feeding and doing developmental things. And if they're struggling with doing some of those things, we have to figure out, well, why are they? Mm-hmm. Instead of just saying, they'll grow out of it, it's okay, you know?
Oh, because absolutely.
They might grow out of it, but I always tell people, what you don't grow out of, we grow into. So yeah. if you have, you know, a bit of a torticollis and we don't help work it out, well, maybe you'll adapt into that. But maybe that won't be such a great thing when you're a little bit older and you have chronic back pain or some scoliosis or
right.
something that started when you were a very young infant. So I feel like early intervention is the most important thing, you know, and I think we should focus a lot on that. And I'm glad there's a lot of OTs that do, you know, focus a lot on that.
So how are you doing during the pandemic with your business, Patty?
Yeah. So I feel really lucky that I've done some telehealth, you know, in this format, you know, in sort of a doxy me HIPAA compliant format. But I do still see in-person patients. I've been very lucky that I have really good PPE equipment. My husband's company, they made thousands of shields and provided our community with a lot of shields.
Oh, wonderful.
So I work with a shield and a 95 mask every day when I see babies. And I see very few babies compared to what I normally do. But in this pandemic, I'm really only seeing the very, very critical babies that really, really need help. Like yeah. where they're either not going to breast or bottle feed
yeah.
or they're very dysregulated. Or they have some other type of injury. So I feel like I've been really lucky to be able to still continue to help people through this and do it really safely. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm not seeing a lot of my other clients, so I'm allowing some telehealth, you know, telemedicine format through some other clients uh-huh. as well. So I kind of limit the flow in my clinic space.
What are you seeing as being like the, conditions, but what are the easiest things to address via telehealth compared to, you know, in person? So like an example would be one of my colleagues sees a couple of feeding therapy clients a week. And we were having this conversation. She said, Sarah, it's just not going very well. She's like, I really feel like there are just some feeding clients that telehealth is just not the way to go. Versus I know therapists who have maybe been seeing clients who have more sensory needs and they thought it was going to be extremely difficult. But by using SI techniques, not necessarily the SI therapy, like true sensory integration therapy, but more of like a done sensory processing model, this has actually been really wonderful doing telehealth because they're more training the parents and the parents are taking a more active role compared to what it was in person. So what are you experiencing as far as what's successful and what's not?
Yeah, so I feel like I agree with that. So I feel like using models of teaching models for parents, because a lot of times when we're in therapy with parents, we tend to be the doers and we take the kids through things. And sometimes parents don't come in a session. Sometimes they do. In my practice, the parent is always present. But
yeah.
I feel like the telehealth model has lended a little bit of, hey, like this is some stuff. This can really empower you as a parent.
Yeah.
And really help you kind of, you know, have some strategies that you should be using at home anyways, but it's sometimes hard to kind of do all that in a therapy session. And I think when you do telehealth, you kind of have to focus on that. Because I have a very hands-on, very body-based practice. So
yeah.
a lot of the therapy I'm doing is very hands-on to the people that I'm working with. So when you don't have that and you're doing telehealth, you're really talking people through mm-hmm. some of the things that you would be doing to them or with their child. And so some parents will really do a great job with, you know, kind of embodying that too and mm-hmm. feeling pretty empowered. With that said, I think there's also a lot of limitations and there's a lot of parents at this point, you know, that haven't really, you know, that don't really take the therapist up on telehealth because they just know it's
right.
not going to work for their child. All the sensory stimulating things like the computer screen is overstimulating.
Yeah.
The auditory is very overstimulating. It's hard to not get reverberation on a computer. And so I think there's limitations to technology, especially mm-hmm. when you're working with kids that have sensory stuff going on.
When I looked online, I had seen that you do quite a bit of community engagement and speaking. can you tell us a little bit about like what it is that you do when you are doing that community engagement, but like more, I guess, more along the lines of like what topics are people most interested in that they ask you to come out and be a keynote speaker for?
Yeah. So yeah, I've done quite a bit of professional speaking, and a lot of it is within the lactation community. And because I wear sort of the double hat, I sort of have that subspecialty of trying to navigate people through like, what are some really hard things to look at? And what does this mean? You know, does this mean they have oral motor issues? Is it sensory? And a lot of times in those teachings, I give people some strategies and also let them know that if this is really out of their scope, they really need to, you know, try to find somebody like myself or a speech therapist that also has a really great understanding of breastfeeding too. Mm-hmm. It would be great to kind of have more OTs and speech therapists have that, you know, have that interest in breastfeeding. And that's kind of one of my goals, is to kind of, you know, put a course together that really sort of matches those two things together.
Yeah.
So that's one of the speakings I do. I also do other speaking engagements to early childhood educators. And when I do early childhood educating, I go through a lot of developmental things that that sometimes from an OT hat, you know, they don't learn in their education like we do. So I look at those parameters also in my teaching, and kind of go through like, what does tummy time look like? How do you transition and help a baby learn how to crawl if they're struggling? And, you know, talking about containers and how to limit them, and, you know, kind of give them the best developmental start that babies can get, because early childhood teachers are incredibly important, because what they do really launches these babies into preschoolers that then get these great fine motor skills.
Right.
So one of the courses I have really talks a lot about the hand and how the hand develops, and how it develops through a lot of the developmental positions that we're doing as early infants. Mm-hmm. So if we skip them, you know, the research shows us that sometimes kids really struggle with core support, and they struggle with fine motor skills, and they struggle with some of those things that really do affect learning and their visual motor skills.
Yeah.
So kind of a mix of things. So to either early childhood teachers, lactation consultants, nurses, physicians, whoever comes to the courses on lactation. And I'm trying to think of, I've taught some other things too. I've taught some courses on headaches as well.
Oh, so interesting.
Kind of a variety.
Will you talk a little bit about that? Maybe like the topics or subtopics within your presentation on headaches. That's really interesting.
Yeah, so with headaches, you talk just a lot about different, like a lot of times different techniques you can do.
Okay.
Kind of do some self-help. And these are all things that I would kind of go through with my patients in my clinic too, is, you know, what are some things, like some pressure points you could do, or what are some possible dietary changes?
Okay.
Or some yoga. I'm also a yoga teacher.
Yeah,
trained,
I saw
so,
that.
So what are some yoga positions you can do? What are some breathing things you can do? So kind of combines a lot of techniques and lifestyle changes to kind of, you know, work with people that have these sort of chronic long-term headaches.
I think this is so great, Patty, because you have such a diverse background that I think it's really going to give a lot of the listeners ideas as to what they can do. I think one of the number one questions I get, I mean, from people in the community, but then also students, is, you know, what can't I do as an OT? So I have a student, she's wonderful, and she's an older student. She had owned her own business with prenatal massage and then postpartum massage. And she's very interested in maternal health. That is the direction she wants to go. She knows what she wants to do, but she does have some more like non-traditional methods that she's used in the past that she knows she's found very helpful with clients. But she asked me the other day, you know, Sarah, how do I know, you know, can I incorporate these things as an occupational therapist or can't I? And I think just speaking with you, and if she were to listen to this, I think it would give her a better idea of how to incorporate some of these more non-traditional methods and still remaining evidence-based. So I think this has been really great. I will have to let her know that she needs to listen to this. Another question I have, and this is, I guess, more for my student too. How do you address maternal mental health when you're working with mamas? And you probably, even if you don't directly address it, I'm sure you're always addressing it when working with new moms and babies. So How what does that look like?
Right. So we have a really great community here in Madison where we have a lot of postnatal mental health providers.
Oh, wonderful.
And so, yeah, so I feel like we're really lucky that we're all sort of connected and I know exactly who to refer people to when I really feel like they're struggling. And a lot of moms are really struggling when they come to see me because they maybe have been through a lot of stuff with feeding. If they don't get to me till their baby's like 2 or 3 months, they've kind of been struggling for kind of a while. So sometimes they already have support services in place, but I'm always doing ongoing screening with my parents, and it's actually on my assessment that they fill out.
Okay.
And then we talk about that. And I always check in with every mom that I work with and, say, how are you feeling? And do you feel like some of the, emotions you're feeling are within a normal range for you? I mean, how would you think you would want to go and talk to somebody else about it? So I always keep my radar on that for moms.
Yeah.
I know that does get missed in a lot of healthcare settings because we focused on, the goal that you came here for. But sometimes what we find the goal that you came here for improves, but then we also see this other piece that's maybe not improving. Mm-hmm. And then if that isn't really matching up, that's really a good time to refer out. So I'm always, referring and checking in with my parents on that.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the maternal mental health piece, do you find most of the professionals you refer out to are true like counseling or a psychologist, or do you have any referral sources that are occupational therapists who specialize in maternal health?
I do actually. So there's a OT in my community that also just got her counseling license.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. So that's kind of her role in the community too. So she's really great at meeting with parents and meeting parents with their children for sensory stuff as well, and kind of getting a nice program down that's not just OT activities, but kind of really matching what's going on in the household. And so she's a great resource for that too, because she also gets the OT piece and then gets the psychology piece as well. But we also have a lot of people that are really very trained and specialized in postpartum mental health in their private practices. So from a counseling piece, that's where I always send people as well.
It's amazing. All right. So Patty, because you said you have kids, how did you and how do you balance, being an entrepreneur, probably working more than sometimes a 40-hour, work week schedule and, having all the other roles that you have in life? How do you balance it all?
Yeah, so I feel like I've always had to do quite a juggling act. I mean, my kids are in college now, so they're definitely not as needy as when I was, in the mix of starting a private practice and doing it for many years too, is in addition to sometimes working multiple jobs. So I just felt like I just always just had to be really organized and really coordinated with those efforts and, just making sure, you do the best you can getting things done and getting back to people. So yeah, I mean, I just feel like for no matter what your profession or your job is, I feel like for parents, it's always a juggle, when you have kids. I'm not sure how parents are doing it now when they have to do their own teleschooling with littles and then trying to do their own practices and maybe do telemedicine and things like that. But yeah, I mean, the juggle is always there for parents. And I think doing the best you do to get your own self-care is important too. So,
So, what advice do you have for occupational therapists who, maybe don't want to be in a traditional setting anymore and want to do more of a role emerging, area of practice and maybe get into entrepreneurship?
What you said, what's my advice to them?
Yeah. Yeah. What advice would you give them?
Well, I mean, I would, definitely give them advice to make sure they really do want to do that because it sounds glamorous, but there's a whole lot of things that, make private practices challenging because you're yourself with yourself. So there's no pension, there's no benefits, there's no, you know, there's not a lot of those nice things that you get when you do have other jobs. There's no umbrella, a safety net for you. So if you get sick, you're sick, and then there's nobody to take your clients for you. So, I mean, there's, you know, some downsides that way. So just make sure that you sort of know all that going in, and that your upsides are definitely stronger than your downsides. Okay. To having a private practice, and then to feel that you are somehow supported, whether it's being with, you know, whether getting a support system from other people that are in private practice, maybe working in a clinic space where you have other people too, even if they have different practices, is really helpful. And I'm part of a business networking group, and we're women that have our own businesses, not at all like mine. I mean, we all have different types of businesses, but we meet bi-monthly. And in the pandemic, we've been Zooming weekly. And that to me is a great sense of support, because we all help each other run our businesses. And, oh, you're not doing that. Okay, how about if you do this? And here's a good web designer. And here's, so I feel like we all support each other. So I think having those built-in networks is really important if you're going to have your own business.
Yeah. Did you ever feel like there was a point where you knew you were ready to start your own business? Or was it just kind of you took the plunge?
I sort of took the plunge because it was sort of an opportunity that I was sort of bridging, you know, getting my last kiddo into preschool. And I was deciding, you know, what part of OT do I really want to go back into? You know, I've done schools, I've done birth to three, I've done home health, I've done inpatient hospital. You know, where do I want to go back into? And in my community at the time, there really wasn't much pediatric outpatient stuff. There wasn't any great pediatric clinics to join at that time. So I kind of, you know, had this opportunity with this friend that opened the clinic, and she said, you know, yeah, you're really good with some of these out of the box things, and, you know, let's, you know, see if it works. And so that's kind of how I started. So it wasn't necessarily as intentional as it was that it was an opportunity that I saw, and then I just kind of went with it, and it has worked out really well.
When you were saying some of the like non-glamorous parts of entrepreneurship, are there things that people really do need to have in place to have a successful business? It may be more and maybe a little less like OT specific, but like, I don't know if there's like, you know, if there are actual like systems they need to have in place or resources they need to have access to in order to ensure their business is success.
Yeah, and I think that really is going to vary from people to people. So I think I think finding your niche is really good, because if you have a niche, then people start finding out about you, and then you network really well with other providers in the community. I think just educating people that are going to be your referral sources is probably the best thing that you can do. And then, you know, most of, you know, building a practice, no matter what your profession is, whether you're a OT, PT, psychotherapist, psychologist, if you're in a private practice, most of your reputation does come from word of mouth. And so if people get helped by you, then you'll continue to get clients from both your providers and, you know, word of mouth from other clients. It's so much easier now if you use social media. You know, you can. When I started my business, there wasn't Facebook 17 years ago. Facebook was new, you know, I think it started maybe shortly after that. But so there wasn't all these networks in place that make it so much easier really for people to start a business. So I really had to launch mine on word of mouth.
Yeah.
And that was kind of all you kind of had, is networking events and word of mouth and making sure you educate the people that are going to be your referral sources so that they know what you do is different than some of these other providers in the community. So I think just good communication, I would say, is probably the best thing you need to have in place. And all the other business stuff you can get help with, you know, get help with how to get your SEO up or how to get your website launched and how to, you know, all that kind of stuff. There's lots of other business partners in most people's communities that they can get together with to kind of, you know, start a business. How do you get your business branded? And what do you want your logo to look like? And all that kind of stuff, I think, is, you know, is common to most other businesses, not just starting an OT practice.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time, Patty. I want you to plug your business one more time, and especially since you do do some public speaking, in case, you know, anyone, there's a community out there or someone's listening and works for a business that would want to bring you in.
Yeah. So my business is Nurturing Touch Therapy. And, you know, I do, my speaking is on a variety of different things, you know, infant feeding, lactation, developmental related topics for other professionals as well. I speak on, and what I'm also going to be adding to my website is some of the courses that I've already taught. I'm going to, you know, put them to voice and put them, you know, put them on my website and, you know, have people be able to purchase them.
That's wonderful.
So they can purchase some, you know, some informational PowerPoints that they can use for their practices as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Patty, for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.